it's funny because I'm sweating right now. I don't know if the camera's picking it up, but I talk to these badass people and I get nervous every single time. It's kind of funny how the camera hides. It hides the sweat. It hides a little bit of the nerves. This is me reflecting as an introverted person. Like, I struggle in big rooms with clanky glasses and lots of people, and I don't know what to do with my body in a big room. It's weird. I don't know what to stand. I'm all over the place. With a podcast, I kind of have a controlled environment. I'm in a brand new office, so that gave me a little bit of nerves, but same mic, same laptop, same TV, controlled environment. I'm in my space, and I still get nervous because I'm talking to some of the coolest people. Like, at one point, I was binge drinking and listening to them and just idolizing who they are, and now I'm, you know, bumping shoulders with them. It's really, really cool. To weave in what you're just talking about, Halataha talked about it on my podcast. Halataha, Young and Profiting Podcast. She's like number one in education in a lot of platforms. She's studied and learned a ton from Jordan Harbinger. She talks about how virtually every single one of her favorite authors she's spoken to. Like, she's checked all the boxes. And she started to draw big guests well before she had the audience to deserve these guests. But what she realized is, you know, this person's got spunk. I'm excited. I'm like here to deliver. These people are like, I'm going to put my chips on her. It's almost like that horse that you don't expect to win and they end up being the greatest horse of all time, like a Seabiscuit kind of thing. It's like, I'm going to put my chips on her. And putting my chips on, you know, Chris Van Vliet, four-time Emmy Award winner, Halataha, Jordan Harbinger's been on the show, Mark Bowden of the Behavior Panel, tens of millions of YouTube views. They're like, it's worth 45 minutes of my time to put my chips on this guy. And I might end up losing that bet entirely. But the dividends it could pay if I take their advice and implement it and continue doing what I'm doing, it's worth their time because together, collectively, we get to impact more people. But I still walk in with sweat on my shirt every single day. I'm still nervous. I'm not like any mastermind. I don't like ninja because I'm not a ninja. Like, I'm an ordinary nervous dude just trying to find the answers. But it's so humbling to know that these people that I once just listened to and in ways idolized aren't much more different than I am. And they're willing to give me a shot. And we're talking about podcasting right now, but we all have those people in our life. Those people that if we just step up, take their advice, show we care, they want to put their chips on us. I freaking love that, John.
It's amazing. It's
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. We're already on part two, so the person that found this is already on to my network. If someone missed part one, the link is in the show notes. Think, live, repeat. That's John's show. And you talk a lot about investing inward, John. Where did that term come from? Because I think it's funny. I was telling my friend Kyle about it today, that your branding's genius. Because you do professionally help people invest, but then you have the investing inward. Tell me where that all came from. Give us a little context here.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it was interesting. So 2020 was a tough year. And so my version of 2020 was this. In the period of a week, my wife was hospitalized twice. Could have died from anaphylactic shock and then complications with missed dosing from medications trying to fix that the allergic reaction. And then 7 days from her second hospitalization, I'm on my way to the ER thinking I'm dying of a heart attack and all the symptoms that you read on Google that says, oh, this person's having a heart attack. Go to the hospital like yesterday. Like that was me, sweating, shaking, clammy, chest pain, thinking you're going to pass out. Well, you know, then I learned about this thing called panic and anxiety. And that was a classic panic attack, something I'd never had before. And there was a lot that was going on, admittedly. So in that time frame when that was happening, thought I might lose my life. Markets were falling 30%+ over the course of 30 days. So my business that is primarily the revenue, you know, generated is from assets under management and, you know, making sure my clients are going to be okay and able to like stay retired. That's weighing heavy on me. You know, COVID, nobody really knew anything about that at that point, but like, oh my God, are we all going to die? Like, and I'm kind of like a germ freak already. So I'm like, this is not great. So it all came pouring down on me. And so 2020 was a relearning how to live for me. It was tough. I had a really hard time really doing anything that I did before, from driving to having meetings with clients to sleeping to eating. You know, we were working remotely at that point, so my heart would just start pounding like sitting, you know, and then you start to hyperventilate and you're like, okay, am I dying? And I can't tell you how many times I've thought, is this it? And then you start looking up symptoms on you know, your medical expert, namely the iPhone. And then thinking, Google is awful for people who have any form of anxiety because Google convinces you in WebMD and you know, Harvard Medical, that they're convincing you that you've got not only what you think you have, but five other things. And so the entire, you know, really from February to the end of 2020, that 10-month period it was awful. It was incredibly difficult on my wife having to essentially be my live-in therapist because it, and it was just like, what's the matter with me? Why can't I drive? Why am I freaking out right now just driving to the store? Why do I have to walk around just to get, you know, the block midday to get my heart rate down? And, you know, by the end, rolling into 21, it started to become clear that I was not equipped. And this is a long answer, but I'm getting to how I ultimately, it'll make more sense how I got to invest in Inward. I was not equipped to think. I was not equipped to handle anything but basically good things. And leading up to 2020, 2019 previous, life was pretty good. You know, got married, had kids, got a house. Launched a business. Business was making money. Things were okay. And yeah, there was challenges along the way, but nothing really significant.
Yeah.
And until I got hit with a bunch of rapid fire, potential tragedies or just major obstacles, I realized how ill-equipped I was to handle them. And it was because I didn't know how to think in a way that would allow me to manage a crisis. You know, anxiety or anything like that. And just as an aside, I had friends who struggled with that and I never understood it. I always would be like, you know, they couldn't go to a concert or didn't want to go to a movies and, it's the anxiety, it's the panic. And you're like, okay, so you just feel nervous. Like I had no clue the reality. There's a reason it's called a panic attack. It's because you think you're dying. It's all the physical symptoms that you equate with any of the worst, you know, medical conditions. And so it gave me a huge amount of empathy, even to this day, understanding what that's like. So anyways, long story short, as I moved into recovery, as I went to therapy, went to counseling to work through this whole process, I became very clear. My thinking was bad. I was a victim. I wasn't taking control of the situation I was in. I was letting life happen to me, not for me. I didn't know how to handle adversity everything was relatively easy. And so ultimately, this idea of I got introduced to podcasts. I wasn't into them before. I started binge listening to, you know, guys like John Acuff and Derek Kinney and Lewis Howes and Ed Milet and just these personal development podcasts that I'm like, oh my gosh, this is brilliant. And I'm like, okay, so I'm kind of like I'm kind of like an investment. We are all our own asset. Our brain is our portfolio. And the relate was very easy for me because I have a financial planning practice and I do this on a day to day. And it's like, I wasn't investing in myself. I wasn't funding my portfolio, namely me. And so it took a lot of iterations. It was like 3, 4, 5 months and torturous discussions with everybody that was either related to me or friends of mine, like continually, well, what about this? Should it be investing inward or ending inward investing and drawing the, I probably went way too deep on all of that. But at the end of the day, the genesis of investing inward was, yes, it's a relate. It's a nod, wink and a nod to what I do with my practice, but it's highlighting the fact that aren't we so obsessed with money and trying to fund our future when our biggest asset, our most important asset, ourselves, might be the most underfunded, broke thing in our lives. And even if you do have $10 million in your retirement one day, if you haven't invested in yourself, you might be the most unfulfilled, miserable person with all of the money in the world because you didn't. And so that was ultimately how through many iterations, that was the final choice. And it's kind of stuck since then.
I think it's powerful. I think one of the biggest losses in our lives is not investing in our health, in our wealth, in our relationships, in our knowledge. We invest in material things, but we don't invest in ourselves. And we actually end up losing in the long run because we invested in the wrong things. What are some of the ways you started to better invest inward and better invest in yourself? We talked about it in part one. I didn't just snap my finger and become enlightened. I'm sure it wasn't that simple. What exactly did you do to start making that change?
It's never that simple. And like you, it's very nuanced. I didn't have a moment of, there were, I guess, several moments of clarity, you might say, but, thinking over it, it was changing what I was consuming for one. So and at that time, it was even more toxic than it is now. In some respects, 2020 and 21 were tremendously negative in terms of health, in terms of society, in terms of the world and everything. Like you turn on the news, left, right, middle of the road, doesn't matter. Everybody was like trying to cash in on who can we scare the living hell out of the most? Like, and let's make money on it. And so I had to shut a lot of that out and just stop consuming news beyond what I had to for my practice. And I started replacing it with positive content. So not just the podcast, like personal development, but also some audiobooks. And incrementally making time to do that. So less fiction, more nonfiction, less TV, more something else. And it wasn't like I didn't cut all of that out. It was just a intentional replacement and starting to see the benefits of it. Equally, for me, in terms of how I approach life and my in just kind of my worldview, as it were. So I approach it from a Christian worldview. So faith and prayer and meditation and actually getting quiet. So not just saying things or praying, but literally just getting quiet. I started to notice that, and I struggle with this even to this day. I always have noise.
Yeah.
And it's now I have kids in the house, so that's part of it. But seriously, like I'll have one AirPod in, even when I'm not around anybody. And it might be good stuff, like a podcast or a book or whatever. But there's no time for me to sit and just get quiet and kind of have some mindfulness and consider where I'm at in life and where I'm trying to go. So I started doing more of that. I did some breathing exercises and started incorporating that into it.
I want to talk a little more about that, John, because mm-hmm. you're talking to someone who will put an earbud into bed. And actually had a argument with my girlfriend recently. She's like, you
uh-oh. Well, I'm not stepping in the middle of this.
This has nothing to do with the, well, I'm touching it and then we'll move somewhere else. Cause it's, right. We've solved the concern. And I've just Excellent. Been at times in my life, I've been very disconnected and I have a podcast with the word connections in it, but I'm disconnected to what's right in front of me because of I'm numbing concerns with noise and I don't sleep well. So I put an ear pod in to help me sleep, but it's disconnecting from my girlfriend that I have that in. So there's these things that go on. I find it difficult. So asking for myself and a friend, you know, I wanted to say asking for a friend, but asking for myself and everybody at home, what does that process feel like? Whether you're in meditation or in prayer, what does that space feel like? Does that cause any anxiety? Does it cause clarity? What does the process like kind of peeling back the onion when you decide I'm going to sit and meditate or pray? Mm-hmm. What does that look and feel like?
That's a good question. And it's, and like I said, and it is ironic. You talk about your connections. There's a lot of irony in what we do.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to get so obsessed with who we're connecting with and talking to that we miss our wives, our girlfriend, like kids, whoever, like, yeah. And I have had at various times I've had to have like candid conversations to be like, okay, let's rein it in. Like, I know you're talking to all the big, cool, crazy people of the world, but you have a family, you have a spouse, like you need to come back. And it's so easy to escape with good things. Like, that's the weird part. And you can justify it. That's how we justify it. Well, it's not bad. It's not like I'm listening to some, I don't know, raunchy comedy routine that has no like personal value beyond like, you know, entertainment. It's like, but it's good stuff. But yeah, you have to not at the expense of others. So anyways, what does it look like? Yes, it can be anxiety inducing in the sense that if you're not accustomed to quiet, which frankly as a society, we're not anyways, but if you're like one of us who really always likes to have something feeding in one of the ears, it's weird. Like you can hear your ears ringing. You can just hear, you're super aware of all this stuff. It's very uncomfortable. So for me personally, one thing I did to transition out of it a little bit was to have like ambient background music or nature noise or something like that. So that for me, and you can find it on Apple Music, on apps or whatever. That was personally helpful because it was a noise, but it was a noise that empowered me to look inward and kind of meditate that way rather than a distracting noise. And I've gotten to the point now where I can literally be quiet, but honestly, sometimes it actually helps. And that's a thing. Like you go to yoga studios or whatever, there's ambient, music or sounds or whatever. And I typically start. So for me, gratitude is huge. And, it doesn't matter if you're a person of faith or not, like gratitude is a common human characteristic that is essential to a good life. Whether, and I'll be super like practical here. Like I will start with thank you for, I'm thankful for, I am aware of, I want to acknowledge. And for me, I thank God. For someone else, you just might be aware of it and just want to call it out and acknowledge it and be like, this house that I'm living in, this apartment, this car that I have, thanks that, you know, for me, I can have the ability to work for myself. Like not everyone can who wants to. And just take 5-10 minutes and it does, you know, it just at the time of recording this, let's be even more real. I mean, I was inspired, you know, our mutual friend, Brian Bogert, some of the examples he was sharing was like crap that happened 3 days ago at the time of the recording. And it was like super transparent and real. This has been a tough week at the time of recording. A lot has gone wrong in terms of just some business stuff that I've been working on and trying to do the thankfulness thing. Didn't feel normal. Like I didn't walk out of it saying, oh, I'm so better now. I kind of was like, thanks for this. Thanks for that. I'm happy. I'm blessed. Yeah. But did I really mean it? And did it really help? I don't know, but I did it. And that's part of it. And then from there you can transition to, you know, and sometimes meditating on some scripture or affirmations or whatever it happens to be for you. you know, I don't have a lot of time in the day for that sort of thing. It might take 15 or 20 minutes. It's kind of that you do it and you figure out what works for you, what makes you comfortable, where you're most calm and at, and you're able to be in a place that's not distracting. You can't do it in the living room with other people around. Like, it just doesn't work. And you can't do it with your phone on, at least not with you, and, you know, with notifications on. But you walk away a lot of times just more clear, more centered, and then ready to deal with the crap that comes up or the good things that comes up from there. I don't know. It's probably too deep, but that's...
I like deep. This is real, real business connections. We're going to get real on this one.
Okay.
For you, is it first thing in the morning, end of the day, or wherever you can kind of squeeze it in with your hectic life with little one?
I try to do first thing in the morning, but I will need to. So, you know, where my office is at, there's some like, not a nature pathway or whatever, but there's a place you can kind of go and be somewhat secluded. Not doing it in January, but, you know, when the weather's decent, just take breathers. Just go out for 10 minutes, pop in the AirPods, get a little ambient music if there are other, like, people walking or whatever. If not, you just listen to nature, like, you know, authentic nature. Yeah. and kind of go that route. But I try to do it in the morning. At night, I just tend to be more fried. And it's not like, you know, I watch TV with my wife at night, right? Like, or shows or a movie or whatever. Like, I'm not some mechanistic, you know, I cut out everything and I try to make my life as Spartan as possible. So I try to save that time for like her and I just connecting and hanging out or whatever. So I'll try to do it in the morning. I'm kind of spent at the end of the day. Although I've done it from time to time.
It's a good feeling to be spent at the end of the day. You're not really supposed to go to sleep with a crazy, you know, crazy monkey mind. If you're spent, that's a good sign.
I've done that plenty of times too, candidly.
Me too.
But yeah,
me
I agree.
Too.
Yeah.
In a perfect world, and I'm not this person, you accomplish so much that you just fall right asleep. So yeah, tackling some of these things that help us invest inward as early as possible or wherever we can within the day is brilliant, rather than trying to backload it, put it at the bottom of the schedule, and then it never happens. Well, it's another thing. Like, a lot of the listeners, this podcast hits personal growth, but it hits business a lot. And most of my listeners are kick-ass business professionals, but they do have families and kids and hobbies and teams and all these things that'll kind of steal their time in a sense. It's things that fill them up. But what are your thoughts on, so I'm a busy professional. I've got all these things taking my time. I feel like I don't have time to make that investment in myself. I'm investing in my business, the people around me, my family. Make the case for investing in yourself, even if someone feels like they just can't. They don't have the time for it.
I'll use a tagline I have on my site.
Yeah.
Because you can't afford not to. You can't afford not to invest in yourself. And I'm a living example of that in 2020. My breakdown, which I'm glad for in hindsight, because I've learned so much and I don't want to in any way stigmatize what I've gone through or in any other, like what anyone else has gone through. Like, it might have been inevitable. I don't know. Like, who knows how that all worked out. But at the end of the day, I do know something that was very clear was I did not know how to think intentionally and take over negative thoughts and emotions and take control of the situation. I was very passive and just let everything happen. And if I went down in the rabbit trail of negativity in my mind, I just went like passively. I didn't even try, and I was easily overcome and defeated. So I had to work through all that, but that was the result of not investing in myself. And could I have avoided it? I don't know, but I know I would have handled it much better had I spent time doing it previously. So it's not about the time you put into it. It's that you do it. So highlight that, number one, and look at it from the perspective. I mean, you could do 1,000 different analogies. The oxygen mask principle, you got to put on your oxygen mask or you're of no use to all your family dead laying there because there's no oxygen. So get your, you know, selfishly, who did I, Ken Rusk, big fan of Ken Rusk. Shout out to him. He's been on the show. I've actually seen him recently. And he talks about he's a big fan of being selfish, and selfish not at the detriment of others, but putting yourself in a position taking care of yourself so that you can be of more service and more value to others, your wife, your kids, your clients, whatever. So I would just argue that at the end of the day, you will reach a point, and it might not be immediately, it might be 5 or 10 years from now, you will be spent. You will be on empty. You will be in a very deep personal bear market. It might even be a personal recession. Okay, if we're going to use this financial relate here. And why wait for that to happen and then have to claw back from so much more and potentially more damage and fallout? Where even just a little bit at a time, you know, this is called this concept called dollar cost averaging in investing, which is just you put in a specific amount into the market on a regular basis, and over time, you're going to get better and better purchase prices because you're getting various purchase points, and you'll, at the end of the day, long term down the road, have a better overall return, or at least a better probability of a better return. And it's not that you're putting $1 million in a month. It's not these huge amounts. It might be $50, but you're able to benefit from the compound interest. And it's the same in our own lives. You know, you take 10 or 15 minutes, meditate, center, pray, do it, whatever you do, and be consistent with it. I guarantee you, you'll be light years ahead of where you would be if you just like, oh, I can't afford it. I got kids. I got a wife. Like, they need you to do that so that you can support them when they have their own crises that come up and obstacles. So looking at it from the perspective of you can't not do it. You can't afford not to. Like, everybody needs you to be strong. And the only way you can be strong is if you take care of yourself and invest.
Let's talk about the change, because we talked about this in part one, about a lot of times we have to just kind of learn by failing to figuring it out. But let's assume the listener doesn't want to fail and you went through a stressful time and anxiety and you hit a really dark moment, and then you made this investment in yourself. You made a conscious decision that I'm going to start investing into bettering myself for the long term. What has changed? Has there been tangible benefits? I know it's nuanced, like it's hard to be like, I'm slightly happier, but I'm sure you've seen tangible whether it's your business or your marriage, what kind of tangible benefits have you reaped the benefit of, John?
So business-wise, I've definitely seen it because I'm more focused on what I need to do and coming up with organic ideas. So for a while, it was kind of like I just, whatever the persona of the advisor is, right? Someone who manages money, does financial planning, has some referrals, maybe does some seminars. I was just kind of like doing that. I wasn't challenging the stereotype. I wasn't pushing the limits. I wasn't trying to be organic or original. I was just kind of doing it. And when you're just trying to do what everyone else is doing, it's not a challenging thing to do. Like, you just kind of go with the flow.
I think that's so most, I just want to say, John, I think that's most of us. We see someone doing something and assume that we need to do it that way. Yep. And I just think that's most of us. I think that's most people listening at home as well.
Well, there's a reason, you know, in not to get all biblical, but there's a reason the metaphor is people are using sheep as a metaphor for people. Because, I mean, like psychologically, sociologically, like you look at those studies, the herd mentality, like there's literal science experiments where, or sociological studies that we kind of just follow and we don't actually think. I love the one where there's a line of people at the printer and they just send people up to the printer and cut in the line. And the reason you gave to cut was, oh, I'm so sorry, I just have to make a copy. And in the large percentage of people that didn't even challenge that to be like, hey, hang on, pal, we're all trying to make copies. Like, you didn't say, hey, my wife is, you know, giving birth on the way to the hospital. You just said you have to do what everyone else is doing. And so many people let them cut in line. So we do just kind of, I love it. And I often wonder what I would have done in that scenario. And I've often thought I should try that someday, but I don't have the stones to do it. But anyway, so,
it reminds me of, there's like studies where if you stare up at the sky, other people will stop and start staring.
Yeah.
And Vanessa Van Edwards did a study with The Science of People. I'll try to find the clip and put it in. But she was staring up at the sky and everyone stopping and looking up. And this one girl starts pointing and she says to Vanessa, "Do you think he's going to jump?" And what happens is we think that there's something to look at because that's what the herd's telling us. And then sometimes we realize there's nothing to see, but subconsciously we actually rationalize why we're looking. There was no person up there about to jump, but the brain can comprehend why it's looking at nothing and it sees someone looking to jump, even though that person wasn't there. This is like neurology in practice, and we don't even realize it's happening to us. So fascinating. I'm pretty sure it's Vanessa Van Edwards' TED Talk.
Yeah,
I'll find
great.
It. But go on. It's just brilliant how this happens without us even knowing it.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy how that mentality happens. And so to go back to your original question of what are some tangible outworkings. So for one, I started to be very approaching my practice from a different perspective. In other words, okay, it's how I've always done it, but why? And suddenly realizing the basic sort of things that it takes to run a business, like an avatar of who you serve, the branding, the unique problem you solve, all these sorts of things. It started to become clear that I hadn't put in the time to actually define those. They were very ill-defined, nebulous sort of concepts that really weren't that specific. And, you know, the business has grown year over year. It's been grown since launching it in 2017. I've been in the industry since 2014, launched a practice in 2017. And it's grown year over year in spite of the recession, in spite of all of that. So it's not like I haven't been successful from a numbers standpoint, but It I don't know how to say it. It felt kind of by accident. Like I was good at what I did. People liked me, trusted me. I tried to put them first, be a fiduciary, all of that. But at the end of the day, I wasn't like, yeah, I didn't have a master plan of where I was going or anything like that. So that started to change. How I interacted with people in viewed situations that I was in also started to change. So rather than immediately seeing myself as a victim, seeing myself as powerless, immediately going to a dark place and allowing myself to be overcome by negative emotions, whatever they were, I started to take time to pause and think, okay, what am I supposed to learn from this? There's a reason that this is happening right now. And how about I try to learn from this so either A, I don't have to repeat the lesson again, or B, maybe I got to help somebody else with it. So I just became like more aware of things. And I know it's nebulous, like to your point, it absolutely is. It's very vague, but I became more aware of things that were going on, conflicts even, you know, like stupid things that I would do or say as a husband, as a father, and just be like, okay, hold on a second. Wait, that's not going to fly. That's not how I should be. Because it made me super aware because I started feeling super like self-conscious, right? Like my wife knows that I'm going through this little revival or whatever and you know, becoming all, I don't know, like developing myself and becoming a better version of myself. And then I go act like an a-hole. And then now I feel like not only do I feel like a jerk, I feel like a hypocrite because she knows what I'm into, what I'm trying to be. And it's kind of held me responsible. When you start to go down this path and people are aware that you are now trying to be a better version of yourself, there's an inherent feedback mechanism in there that says people are going to kind of watch you more. And that helps hold your feet to the fire and gives you a natural sense of accountability because we have pride, we have ego, and we don't want to look like idiots. Like, oh, John, the guy who loves personal development, is the nastiest, you know, son of a gun I know.
Yeah.
Well, so that also was, I think, kind of a tangent that, you know, and it's like this. It's like the markets. It's not up and to the right. You know, it's up and then it's down. And you have some up weeks and down weeks. But the overall direction at the end of the day is higher over the long term than where it was 2 years ago.
I love it. It. Just as an asterisk, guys, you said something about, you know, John, nastiest son of a gun. I was agreeing with the sentiment. I realized in my head I said, yeah, right afterwards because I was agreeing with sentiment. But realistic, I think John is the opposite of the nastiest person I know. He's one of the nicest guys I know. I just wanted to put an exclamation point. I said, yeah, right, as you said, John, he's a nasty son of a gun. And I'm like, yeah, of course he is. Like,
yeah, why do you think I had him on here?
To pivot a little bit, man, because it's been a big part of your development as of recently, why'd you start your podcast?
Well, so here's the thing. I'm going to give you the story. I'm going to give you the quick backstory here. I was just sharing it this past weekend with someone. It is very unique, and I'm well aware of that. So we were raised in a super, 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 to the nth degree, super conservative Christian home. So anything you can fill in the blank, it's probably that and more, and we'll just leave it at that. So one of the unique things of my upbringing, though, going to church on a regular basis isn't unique. But what was unique was they had this thing called Messages from Young Men, where once you turned 12, you basically gave a short sermon to the congregation.
I had a bar mitzvah when I was 13. So in a weird way, it's very similar when I was 13.
In that sense, it is. Yeah.
So go on.
You get up there. And so every 6 months or so, I'd get up in front of 300 or 400 people and deliver a sermon. And by the time I was like 18 or 19, I had delivered like a Wednesday night 40-minute sermon, which was very unusual for that age to have to be talking to adults. And, I no longer attend that place, and we've kind of grown in our faith and walk and all that in terms of that's another story for another podcast. But what I walked away with was this very odd passion for speaking in public. Like they say, people fear speaking in public more than they do dying. I love speaking in public. Like I love being on a stage, and it became clear to me into 2020 and 21 and beyond into present is I want to be a keynote speaker. I want that to be part of who I am and what I do, not instead of my financial plan of practice, but in addition to, because you have a business and you run your business, you have some flexibility to wrap in various things and cover different areas. So I'm like, okay, how do I build keynote speaking into this? Well, so far, the only proof of concept I have is me delivering short sermons from the ages of like 12 to 21 or 18 or whatever it was.
Impressive, by the way. It is very impressive.
It was an experience that I definitely benefited from.
Yeah.
And so I realized that nobody really knows who I am. I wasn't on social media until 2022, zero footprint. So nobody knows who I am. I'm not connected to anyone outside of LinkedIn in this very tiny circle. And I'm like, well, if I'm going to keynote speak, like I have to get out there. I have to meet people. I have to connect with people. And I have to have a proof of concept because I know I can do it, but nobody else does. So it seemed like a natural fit to start a podcast because it would, A, connect me to amazing people. And it absolutely has exceeded my expectations. And B, I now have to date 34 episodes of me talking. Now, yeah, I'm interviewing, but it is me talking. And from that, I'm actually going to start to leverage the opportunity to do some smaller keynote opportunities and kind of go from there. So that was a big part of it. And also the thing I didn't realize before I started the podcast that I'm very aware of now is I love interviewing people. Like I look at someone like Lewis Howes now or Harbinger or any of the big, top 10 Milette. I would absolutely love to have a show where I have a sit-down studio and it's all fancy and interview in an engaged way like that. And I didn't know that about myself when I started this, but that is now absolutely also on the future plan list, in addition to keynote speaking, is to continue to grow the podcast to the point, whether it's this iteration of it or it's a different one, but doing so on a much larger scale and hopefully in person one day and impacting hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people.
Love it. Let me ask one tiny question about this.
Yeah.
Cause you went in, you have way more public. Well, I'm impressed with the amount of public speaking experience you have. That's incredible. You go in, you're like, I'm going to be a public speaker. As a podcast host, you're not per se the one holding the torch every time. You're more asking questions and allowing the pros, we'll say, because all these people are way ahead of you and I right now. We're going to get there, but they're ahead of us. You're letting them do the talking. What have you learned from your guests that have allowed you to be a better speaker? I'm going to ask this tiny little bite-sized question, and I ask you the biggest question ever. But what have your guests taught you that you've been able to implement into your own personal public speaking?
Stories and humor, by far. You have to have stories. You have to have humor if you're going to talk to people. End of the day. You have to have a clear message. You have to, and these are things that, like, duh. But no, it's incredibly difficult to actually attain what your clear, exact message is and actually build an engaging story or a humorous story that isn't just, you know, like a ba-dum-tsh sort of thrown moment, right?
Yeah.
So be clear with what your message is, because if you're not, the audience isn't. Be clear with the problem that you solve. And not just the problem that you solve, but the solution that you bring to the table. And again, the what problem do you solve? Well, I solve lack of motivation. Way too broad. Like you and every other idiot on Instagram, and I'm including myself in that mix, that I get DMs all the time. Hi, I see you. You know, I've never like engaged with this person ever. I don't know who they are. And suddenly it's like, I saw you say that you're really struggling in the grind right now, and I'm here to coach you through success. Like, I'm here to solve your development and motivational issues. Like no, like that's way too general. Everybody's doing that. What's the unique thing you solve? What's the unique solution you have, and who are you speaking to? And these are all things I'm speaking as if I've done all this. I am in the process of building out these things. But before I talked with, at this point, you know, basically 40 very successful people in a variety of fields, and essentially either on camera or off camera, have them all say some iteration of that. I'm like laser focused on that now. Whereas I wasn't before that. I just wasn't. I didn't have the awareness that I have now of that.
John, today's been fun, man. We've been talking for a long minute. As I tease, it was the most random intro and outro I've ever done, because John and I have been talking for like 90 minutes straight here. How do listeners catch part one if they miss that? I think both conversations can be listened to on their own. Send me a DM if I'm wrong. I wanted to dive deep into John's story, but we dove a little bit into my story on John's podcast. How do people subscribe to your show and listen to that and support you?
Yeah. So great question. Right now, I primarily promote the show on Instagram and Facebook. So that's like in terms of building the following of Think, Live, Repeat. And I'll also do some, collaborate with a lot of the guests, do some different reels and posts and stories like that. So that's where most of the activity is at the moment as far as the show goes. So follow me. I'm just at John Skomsky and on both Facebook and Instagram. As far as where the business is going, so I'm on the verge of 2023 is going to be a big year in terms of releasing kind of the next iteration, John 2.0, in terms of where I'm taking the financial practice and moving into the public discourse in terms of content being created. That's hopefully not the average sort of content that we're as an industry known for, and also doing some education so that investors, whether they work with an advisor or not, are able to be much more aware of what's going on. And protect themselves from being taken advantage of, which happens, unfortunately, far too often. So follow me on LinkedIn if you're engaged, more interested on the business side of things, because more to come there. There'll be a YouTube channel launch. Can't get all the details out yet, but more to come. But for starters, podcast, Instagram, and Facebook.
And people can punch subscribe on the podcast, hear me on Think, Live, Repeat as well.
Yes.
And just planting seeds, we probably already mentioned a couple of the names. Give me the 3 to 5 dream guests that possibly we'll see on the show in the greater future.
I got this. So number one, and I'm hot on his trail. John Acuff, episode 52. I'm coming for you. I've got connections. All right. You might not escape me on this one. Alex Hormozy, Lewis House. He's going to be down the way. I admit it. He's going to be down the ways a little bit, but I'm just putting that out there now. And, Rory Vaden. Rory Vaden is an incredible branding guru. I've never met anyone quite like him. So yeah, those would be the four that come to mind.
Boom, baby. And all of them listen to my show already. So go hit up. There's about 2 billion people that listen to the show. There's a small family in Pakistan that hasn't heard it yet, but I've got a pretty big audience, John. So hopefully we get this out to the right people.
Family in Pakistan, if you're out there, tune in whatever time it is.
John, again, it's been a great long conversation with the two parts today. And I appreciate you coming on my show.
And thank you for having me. And I appreciate you coming on my show. And I love this weird, awkward intro, outro thing we got going. I think it just may be the secret sauce for one of our better performing episodes. We'll have to see.
Dude, it's funny. And people send us a DM or something if you have feedback on it. But I heard, and I'm not going to give you the whole story, but the short piece of advice was so many podcasts start with this like long-winded introduction. And I feel like we just dove right in.
We did.
No context. So if anybody's listening still right now and they liked that we dove right in without bio or context, let me know, because I'll just scratch the bio and dive right in for more of you. So that's a question for the listener. John, man, again, let's shut it off. I know we got other things to slay today.
Outstanding. Thanks, Ben.
See ya. Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.